Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Today's guest, Paula Goldman, is at the center of the defining question of our AI era. How do we get the enormous upside from AI without losing our humanity? Paula is Salesforce's first ever, and I'm going to read this title here, Chief Ethical and Humane Use Officer, where she has helped to shape the company's approach to AI, and trusted AI in particular. She's also an author of the upcoming book, Manage the Machine, How to Harness Human AI Collaboration at Work. And most importantly, she's a dear friend and an amazing human being. Paula, so excited to reconnect here and get your thoughts. How can we save ourselves and empower ourselves at the same time?
Well, it's such a pleasure, Alex. It's been a minute, and it's always really fun to have these conversations.
So tell us a couple things, right? Like, your role is not a job role that exists in any job description ever. I think you're the first of a kind. And, you know, what have you learned from shaping the AI dialogue around trusted AI in one of the most important enterprise technology companies of our times?
Yeah, it's funny because first of all, congratulations on saying the title correctly. Not an easy, yeah. Not an easy feat.
I had to read it very slowly. Yeah. Spit my key level. Thank you very much.
So, the role was actually created something like 7 years ago, and I have to credit the leadership of Salesforce. Obviously Mark Benioff, but the executive team at the time who really understood that technology is moving super fast and that the blueprint for how to use it well isn't necessarily like written in stone somewhere. And so how should we think about that, knowing that, as an enterprise business, like trust has always been the number one value, right? And our technology has to work like we say it does, or like, our business is at stake. And so, so the answer to that question was really about process and rigor and finding a way to actually raise the questions internally. And so I guess I'll say two things. One, it's interesting that while no one else has this unique title, there are more and more trustworthy AI or responsible AI jobs going around, like at the Frontier Labs and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's really awesome to see colleagues and to learn from them at other companies.
And in fact, they're hiring philosophers, right?
Like, they are. Is what I heard.
Like,
they are.
Finally, philosophers can get out of Nietzsche land and into real land.
Well, I mean, I have to say, my mother was not thrilled when I went to get a PhD in anthropology. She's probably happy I was getting a PhD in anthropology. I'm not so sure, but here we are, right? And there I feel like it's actually part of the work, right? Like, a lot of the work is very technical, and I have a really cool cross-disciplinary team that, like, I have data scientists and I have engineers and I have like political scientists and I'm an anthropologist. But the cool thing is that, like, you kind of need to think about these problems from all these different angles to get the right answer. And part of it is about culture. Like, it's about getting the product right, but it's also about creating a culture internally where people are asking the right questions. And that can't just be me or my team. It has to be everyone.
That's beautiful. Well, I have to echo your sentiment about Salesforce, both on trust and looking ahead. And as you know, like I worked at Salesforce at some point, and then we had the good fortune of being a partner in an early days, and then somebody from the partners said team said, "Hey, I know you guys are pretty small, a startup, two guys and a dog. In fact, we didn't even have a dog; we just had two guys." But they said we could use that thing in us, and so why don't we like try to use you to improve our user human experience for our customers and partners, and eventually, and they did, and eventually, after passing through probably the most rigorous trust and security review process that we still have yet to pass back in the days, which was impressive, where live deploy, like it was true commitment to get it done. It ended up creating a great partner experience, and then Salesforce went ahead and actually communicated to the partners about how they care about the partner experience and how they work hard at simplifying it, almost running ads on LinkedIn and X to do that. And I was just blown. And those ads and whatever they did were better than anything that we've ever done, still to this day, about our
That's
own
so cool.
marketing, just for the marketing to their own partners, not even prospects, not customers, partners, on how we want to create a better experience for them. And I thought that was legendary example of a mature company that may not need to do that work as hard, right? But they still had the motivation, on the one hand, to seek out innovation, on the other hand, to put that innovation through, like, quote unquote, us through a ringer to ensure that nothing would go wrong, and then bring that to improve a human experience of the partners where they really like cared about who are you, what do you want to accomplish, and these obvious questions that we rarely
Well,
actually
it's
go
so,
through.
I love that story. It's such a cool story. Thank you for sharing it. It made me think of so many things. There was a story. So there's a story in the book that kind of echoes that. Before I tell it, though, I want to say I think everything you're talking about is becoming more, not less important as AI grows more powerful. And even as like, so as everyone's personalizing messages and everyone's automating marketing and how you reach humans, like obviously your work also needs to be legible to AI, right? That's its own challenge and its own opportunity, but how you reach people and really connect with them makes a massive, massive difference, right? And how authentic that is and how the message stands out and how you deepen those relationships. So the story, I have a chapter in the book that's about AI and marketing. And the story I went really deep on is actually a well-known story. It's about the Harley-Davidson turnaround in the 90s, right? So I started with the history, right? And the story was Harley-Davidson was like down and out, like Japanese competitors, they like basically were kind of a breath away from doom. And they realized that they had this one really important asset, which was their community, the community of loyal customers. And they went really, really deep on building these Harley communities. And I talked to the woman that was in charge of this strategy that ended up creating all these incredible, like actually monetizable experiences, whether it was like a museum that had like travel to it or it had, they had like all these different things that they were like the Harley owners groups were creating these communities of enthusiasts. The important part, though, was that it was centered on the people that like these dealerships, these local businesses, all of which were part of this network of partnerships that turned the company around. And it was that that turned the company around. Now, fast forward to where we are with AI. Right. Think about how
So
much.
hold on, Paula. Was that before people were getting Harley tattoos, during,
No,
or
that is
after?
what caused people to get Harley tattoos.
So
You couldn't.
before then, people weren't getting Harley tattoos.
Yeah, no, this is like, so when you think about like
Yeah.
Harley is not just a motorcycle brand to people. It's an identity. It's a
It's an
source of pride.
identity.
Like the person that I talked to, and a woman named Laura Lee, who's now doing a whole bunch of boards, but at that time led their enthusiast services. She talked to me about like how she would get letters from people. Like there would be, a letter from a mom whose child had been killed, like as a, in service during a war or something like that, serving in the military. And she would send like a photo of like learning to ride a bike for her son, or a woman who really wanted to learn how to ride a bike. Like they created enthusiast groups for women that wanted to ride motorcycles. And so she camped out at a store in Wisconsin. Like she would get these fan notes from them, right? It's this kind of like visceral enthusiasm, this connection, this idea that, the company is like serving a part of your identity and your aspirations. And the Harley Owners Group allowed people to have access to leadership opportunities and business opportunities that they wouldn't have had otherwise. I would argue same thing with like our Salesforce ecosystem, right? Like our Salesforce ecosystem is about, it's on the strength of the business opportunities that it creates across the board, whether it's, small businesses, large businesses, or people that are Salesforce admins at different companies, right?
And I have to kind of I've asked the it was a little plug because I met an admin who has a tattoo of Salesforce.
What?
Which is kind of even more impressive than for an enterprise software brand, right? But it was the community. Somebody helped her get a job when she wasn't going through a tough time. And I
Yeah.
do, and we all know that like the Salesforce Dreamforce event, which is coming up, is like Disney for B2B type of
That's a good
experience.
way
And
of describing it, yeah.
so it has this, so there's a lot of some of it is probably deliberate, right? Some of it is deliberate, but like it's genuinely people connect. I think there's a lot like that
Yeah.
comes from Mark in promoting a community and a community of communities. It almost feels like that as well, which is
That's
fantastic.
right. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that the Harley story is kind of going to be essential for all of us
I
going
think
forward.
so. And it'll look different for different businesses, but okay, so here we are in this world where, people are already, our attention is inundated. And it's not just businesses that have, like, it's not just if you're a marketer or your, whatever your business goal is, it's not just you that has access to AI agents. So does your customer, so does the consumer. And they're going to have the ability to filter things out too, right? So the authenticity of how you build these relationships and how you take these messages and really make them shine for people makes a massive difference, which is why I think what you're doing, Alex, is so cool and even more relevant as this challenge becomes bigger and bigger. And I think it will also, it'll look like things like Dreamforce. It'll look like things where they're, you're curating community for people. It'll look like things that are both the AI side and the human side will have to come together to continue to be competitive.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And we were chatting about industries that particularly require trust. So everything requires trust because we're inundated by a lot of
Yeah.
noise, right?
Yeah.
But then there's these regulated industries or functions, right? Investor communications as a
Yeah.
function, or insurance and pharma and health
Totally.
as a service, as a kind of industries, infrastructure. Things that are very much observed by the government, right? So they have this really amazing challenge. On the one hand, they need to provide evidence, especially in the world of easily created blah, right? Like you need substance, you need something that feels like there is a 200 page of gold and
Yeah.
evidence underneath whatever it says there, or years of
Yeah.
experiences. But if you show up with the 200 pages of that gold, It's not gold, right? It's like no, we're no longer like maybe you back in getting your, you know, anthropology PhD days, you were able to crank out these books, right? But some of us like me, we're never able to do that in the first place. And certainly harder now when we're bombarded with Instagram and distractions everywhere. So on the one hand, it feels like we need an experience that starts easy, right? And like meets us where we are at a, but then allows us to go down the trusted path
I
that
totally
is
agree.
relevant for us, or maybe like it's guided a little bit because, you know, a really thoughtful communicator will guide you on a journey. Like the best teachers, they don't just
That's true.
improvise, right? Like they kind of have a plan of how you select what's relevant for you or not, right? Like part of being trusted is being able to say, we're not a good fit for you, right? Like we're not like we're th this is not us. This is so, but being able to do that while having AI working in the background, getting people the right information through, you know, enabling agents to read your brilliant thought leadership and know that it's trusted on the one hand. But then when the humans gets there, like have them have the journey adapt to the way they want to consume at that particular point in time on their device, that's not
It's
trivial,
no, it
right?
is not trivial. It's not
And
trivial
it's
for
yet it's
many,
essential,
many
right? Like that's
reasons.
kind of your book, right? Like that's your book is like we need the substance, the AI get the right stuff to the machines so they help us. But then when I, the human being, land there, I don't want some machine generated BS that is pseudo personalized because I'm gonna be I have a scan for that. I'll
You'll
be turned off by
know.
that pretty early, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I think you mentioned a few challenges that I think are really interesting. So one is particularly for regulated industries, but really for everyone.
Anyone, yeah.
How do you have that sort of governance that ensures not only that what you're saying or sending out is kind of accurate, but that you're not tripping over things that could either get you in trouble or be really embarrassing? And as you know, like there have been no shortage. There's been no shortage of stories about things going wrong, like from way back in the day, pre this wave of AI. Like, there was a fast food restaurant that automated their marketing and sent out a promotional email to their German customers celebrating Kristallnacht. Like, not intentional.
I missed that one.
And you sort of see the modern day equivalents of that with AI. And it's interesting because I in specifically when it comes to sort of content governance, there are ways to use AI to like set the right parameters in advance. Like it's a lot of what we do, what my team works on with our Agentforce team is, how do you create, we have essentially kind of a control pane where the person that's setting up an AI agent is able to say, like, here are the topics. Please don't go outside these topics. And then, like, here's the tone. And also, like, we're gonna set a filter for toxicity, and we're gonna set a filter for kind of these issues that might be specific to our particular product, and the particular sensitivities that we may not want to stumble onto. So that's an interesting challenge. I think that's like a solvable. So, not totally solved, but like there's a lot of good controls around it.
And
Then
so,
there's
like
the
the
question.
part of it is like basically what we're saying is, I think you and I share that methodology. You're mixing deterministic and probabilistic in the
Exactly.
best,
Yes.
like
Are
these
we
two
going to nerd out on
dimensions.
that? Should we nerd out on that for a second?
Well, what? Yeah, let's like for folks that are not familiar with what those are, like why don't you explain them? I'm sure you'll do a better job than I would.
I mean, I think that there are many, many amazing things about this wave of AI. And typically when people mean talk about this wave of AI, they're talking about essentially these wave of frontier models that are not they're not going to give you the same answer to your question if you ask it twice. That's what's called probabilistic. They're kind of just they're there's some variation in what they're gonna create, and that's actually beautiful when you're look using it to augment your own creativity, because there's gonna be a little bit of chance that goes into it, versus how we thought about software in the past, where it's like there is a right answer and it's binary. And that's why you had all the old flow charts of the past, like the whole customer service trees that would be like, if they say A, get them B. But those were, also very frustrating because they couldn't respond to you fluidly, and they couldn't understand, like, if you said, let's say you said you wanted to get a return, but instead you're like, where's the refund? And maybe it misunderstood what you're saying, even though it was the same intention. So the answer to both of the answer is not one or the other. It's a marriage of both, right? Because if you're like, you definitely want, let's say you're using AI for customer service to extend that analogy. You definitely want that fluidity. You want someone to be able to pick up the phone, get your customer AI agent, have a conversation that makes sense and not get them super mad, right? But you also don't want that AI agent promising a refund for something that is out of policy, or like, and that happened, and there were lawsuits about that. Like, that was another famous, case that came out in the early days of AI. And so the answer really is, and this is how Salesforce thinks about it, is combining the determinism, all the sort of things that we've learned from decades of business of like what these workflows need to look like, with the dynamism, the non-determinism of cutting-edge AI models.
And the reason people get confused is because we have two parts of our lives, right? Like one is like where we're writing an email, like, or like trying to psychoanalyze our relationships with, ChatGPT or whatever. And there, like, there's information, and it's like it's, any insight is better than no insight type of thing. And there's not as much at stake, it seems like. Certainly from a business perspective, but then the moment you have a regulated workflow or like high impact financial dependent decision, you could get in trouble really, really quickly. And I think a lot of people are, we're an early innovation company, so I don't want to kind of dismiss other companies like that. But I see like these AI companies that are basically popping up, that are like planting a flag, testing some ideas, and they may not be real. Like they're testing things. They're just like, but they look real because it sort of looks like it's clean, and it's they use some agent to do this or that. And then you kind of start getting overwhelmed with the noise
Oh my gosh, there's
of
so
things, right?
much noise.
So therefore you need to go back and say, okay, this is a high value workflow or compliant workflow or revenue or cost impact of this could be dramatic to our business. And we need to put some rigor, and we need to put people who will be around, who are kind of, not experimenting, who are like the sales forces of the world. Or like if you're picking startups, like, who care about regulated industry like yours and have a skin in the game and are not just
100%.
like a bet on this. And I kind of think there's a lot because of the noise, it almost feels, there will be flight to quality,
I think
if
that's
people could get
true.
it.
I think that's true. I feel like there's a lot of hype and fear of missing out, and to be clear, I actually think experimentation is extremely important, right? So if you go in and say, like, I have to have this all locked down and totally figured out before I get started, like, you're gonna miss the boat, right? That said, there are particular areas of work where you want to make sure you're experimenting within a safe sandbox. And
Yeah,
so,
I've
like, to
never
give
wanted
and
experimental accountants. That's how you get in prison. Like
Well, here, no,
that.
and here, for example,
Yeah.
we have an incredible customer named 1-800-Accountant, and it does the business does basically financial advice for small businesses. And every year around tax time, you can imagine they're totally inundated.
Yes.
And most of those inquiries are like, has my tax return been filed? What's its status? So that's like a perfect question for AI, so long as it's within, a reasonable number of guardrails. Like, you probably want that person to be authenticated. You don't want to just be giving away someone else's personal information. But that's like fairly trivial to use AI for right now, and transformative. But the minute someone asks, should I restructure my business on account of tax strategy? Like, you don't want AI answering that question for a number of reasons. Like, one, this is a very regulated category. Financial advice is a regulated category. Second, when someone's asking a question like that, not only do you want to make sure they get a quality answer, that is a great opportunity to deepen the business relationship, right? So another piece of really important human AI collaboration principles is like, what's the human AI handoff? Like, what is the time, and especially here, we're talking about when AI escalates to a person, and setting those rules in advance and keeping them in mind to like understand as they evolve, right? Because the capabilities will change and the landscape will change. But I think it's those types of things that will become just sort of standard questions when we're implementing AI.
And it's, I think it's interesting that you brought up the sort of frequent question. So we are like, we have a AI generating questions. When you, like, for example, load something in, like, it kind of reads it and generates its questions. And then we know that for some industries, those questions may be great from AI perspective, but they're probabilistic. And we actually know that there is a deterministic set of questions that are the right
Interesting.
frequently asked questions. And so we add, had to add that, like, sounds basic, but it had, like, we wanted, like, a we saw ahead of it, and the customer side are asking, well, what if I want to combine the FAQs with together with the AI, right? Because we all know the FAQ concept. And so you're giving, on the one hand, you're giving, organic ability to ask questions, right? But on the other hand, you're providing a guided experience based on what you need to accomplish and what you expect the clients need to accomplish. So, and you could change those FAQs over time based on the data, because now you're actually smarter about what people really think about, right? And that kind of is a great, like, so the accounting example is great, because, like, we could almost think of a number of industries where you could take out the routine from people. So we have like one of our customers I was telling you that relate to, that reminds me of poor tax folks around the submission deadline to employee benefit advisors and brokers who do support all the, like, an HR people who support employee benefits decisions in the US, which happened around November, time frame, all at the same time. And oh my God, like, how much freedom and ability to do higher value things it gives to people's lives, that if they could, if they could outsource some of the things that are not amazingly value add and focus on the human component. What have you
No, that's
seen
right.
that happens? Like, because everybody's worried, if, like, we were talking, like, my job is gonna be gone and da da da. And I think we're finding that you just need to be more human and leaning into your strength that only you can do. And those could be really fun part of the job.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that's what we are going to find as AI gets more and more powerful, is that these human skills, relationship building, creativity, judgment, situational judgment. Like, I actually think the scarce resource may not be AI. I think it might be human judgment and how we design these AI systems to make the best of it. And I kind of deliberately called the book Manage the Machine, because I think that's what it is, right? Like, we're used to thinking about management as people, but it turns out that it's, there's some, obviously AI is not a person, it should be treated like a person. But there's a lot of similarity in terms of like learning how to delegate, learning not only how to like give a task in a way that AI understands how to do it well and can figure it out, right? So some wiggle room. You don't like, there's no point in telling it exactly every single thing, because then why bother? But you also need to give the right context and the right guardrails, and then see how it does and keep expanding it. And I heard over and over from people in different industries, lawyers, people that like startups, like tech startups, same thing. Like you're experimenting in a similar way as you would delegate to a person on your team. And so the skill of like how we manage, and that's just like one part of it, I think is going to be really important, because all of a sudden we have this collaborator. It's not an inert piece of software. It's not a person, but it's doing work, and we need to figure out how to manage it.
What's your take on the skill of curiosity? I think I was telling you one of the reasons I wanted, like I started the podcast is to remind myself that I need to shut up and listen to people smarter than me and learn to ask questions and follow the thread and not over program it, like not like kind of follow the conversation. And I see sometimes AI does a good job in this area, and sometimes it
Well, there's a
doesn't. Like, what's your
danger.
take there? What's
There's
your
a
take there?
danger. There's a danger. So I'm really glad you asked this question, because that was the other kind of one of the other big pieces of how we manage AI, is that we need to be setting it up in a way that preserves that judgment, that taste making, that curiosity. And there is a risk that, like, it's well known, and like, again, it's been like studied forever, that people, especially outside of their domain of expertise, tend to trust AI outputs so too much, right? And so there is a risk that it's like, it's the same risk that people are talking about now, like I think calling it cognitive offloading, right? Where it's like, I need to understand this topic, or I need to write this thing, I'm going to ask AI to do it. And there's really, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that on its face, but there are situations where you really want to be able to preserve the mental effort and energy that goes into clarifying your own thoughts or learning, and not just offloading. So, to give you an example, so I have a whole chapter about product innovation in the book. And there was this story from IKEA, where their innovation team wanted to create, they just wanted to like break the boxy prototype of a couch, right? They saw a lot of couches. What could the couch of the future look like? And so they brought in AI, and it kept defaulting to the mean. Like, it kept kind of bringing up the same sort of boxy prototypes. And so they had to force themselves to think before they brought in AI again. And they started thinking about like, other metaphors like camping or gathering or whatnot, and ended up with this really cool foldable couch that was like, you could carry it. It was like just a few pounds, and it ended up being in a museum exhibit. And the point of that story is like, there are techniques to preserve the human side of the thinking and the creativity and the discernment. Sometimes that's before the AI runs. Sometimes it's after the AI runs, where you've got like a really critical decision. Like, let's say that same financial advisor that we talked about, hypothetically, right? Like, you might imagine that they're using AI to brainstorm answers to a query about financial advice. That's something people do. But you need that person to be accountable for that advice. They need to own it. So there's a little bit of positive friction about, like, it could be like, sometimes people do it so that they ask people to actually write up their own rationale before they're submitting something. There's lots of different techniques, but again, on both sides, this notion that it's not just about getting the best from AI, it's about getting the best from people as well, and finding the systems that bring them both together.
Ironically, this reminds me a little bit of Mike Tyson quote. It's like everybody has a plan until they get hit in the face. And I think AI is that plan. It's this sort of analytical system that kind of makes it easy to avoid decisions or avoid things. And then you need to then meet humans and well with a rigor, and then you get, oh wait, that doesn't work. Like this doesn't work And then
100%.
that's kind of you. Then you can maybe go back to AI and
Yeah,
refine it, right?
that's totally right. But good job. We brought in my mom. We brought in Mike
Yeah,
Tyson.
Mike Tyson and your mom,
That
with that anthropology degree. So what I think everybody is interested in kind of figuring out how to manage the machine. What where can they find your book when it's coming out? And what's the big nugget that you want to encourage people to do differently as a
Yeah,
result
well,
of
thank you for
staying up
asking.
late?
It is available. It'll be available. It's available for pre-order now. It comes out September 15th, wherever books are sold, Amazon, but also your local bookstore. And the nugget really is this. It's about the companies that are getting the best results from AI. Obviously, they're managing the technical side of it, but they're also managing the human side of it. They're seeing it as a human management challenge. So all of these things we talked about in terms of building the skills, retaining the judgment, the creativity, the curiosity, all of that. It's not just, and honestly, I had to like write the book to like really get through tons of case studies and understand how deep this was. But like, it's not just a nice to have, it's actually how you get the right results from AI is building the right human AI collaboration. So that's the takeaway. It's full of really practical tips, org by org, marketing, sales, service, and so on. And I honestly like I wrote the book because I wanted to be in conversation with people about this and see it take more institutional form. And so I'm like really excited to hear from people as they to hear their thoughts and what they're seeing and doing and what their best practices look like.
So can people find you on LinkedIn? Where's the best
Yeah,
place to
LinkedIn
find
is the best place. Yeah.
Paula
Yeah.
Goldman? So
Yep.
I'll summarize it in my as I read it is to get better at AI, you need to get amazing at being human. Paula Goldman,
Yes. Yes.
thank you so much for coming and writing the book and sharing your nuggets and being a great human, as
Oh,
everybody
thank
can see here.
you. Oh, thank
Thank
you
you,
so
Paula.
much. This was really fun.
Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relayto.com, RELYTO.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relayto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.